Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, today I will try to explain a little bit the work that I have been doing with Tony Gargheta, Michael Schmidt, which is a postdoc at the University of Melbourne, and Benedict von Harding, who was in Melbourne but now is in CSIS. So just a brief outline of how the talk will go. First, I will address the fine-tuning problem in the MSSM. I think we heard the other day mentioned in Matthias' talk about the little hierarchy problem. So I will actually try to address that and how it actually works in the MSSM. Then I will go on and tell you a little about how one deals with the fine-tuning problem in the NMSSM, in this scale invariant version of the NMSSM, especially in the regions where the coupling lambda, which I will introduce later, becomes large, and what happens there. And I will also talk about the phenomenology in this type of models, what happens with the Higgs, SUSY searchers, dark matter, so on and so forth. But okay, before I jump into that, let me just briefly tell you a little bit about what happens in the MSSM, especially with the Higgs mass. Okay, so we know that in the MSSM, the Higgs mass comes at tree level from the D terms, right, of the weak gauge groups. So in this formula that I have written right here, basically it would be this part. Okay, there is an upper bound at tree level for the Higgs mass, even roughly by the C mass, and that has to do with the fact that Ford couplings are proportional to the gauge couplings, the weak gauge couplings. And therefore, there is this upper bound on the Higgs mass at tree level. And this was already, okay, this was one of the, I guess, a good motivation to why they went and searched for the Higgs at LEP, okay? And they didn't find anything. So that started to become a problem. But then it was realized that if the stop soft breaking parameters were large, they could actually induce contributions to the quartic coupling that could become large, and that would raise the Higgs mass to values above 114 GeV. Okay, so this is a formula for the Higgs mass, and that works in the case of the decoupling limit. Okay, and that limit is in the case that the CPO mass is much bigger than, let's say, the lightest Higgs. Okay, in that case, one can actually decouple the charge Higgs and the CPO Higgs, and the heaviest CP even Higgs. And in that case, one can find a simple analytical formula for the Higgs mass. And as you can see here, there are several contributions. Okay, so there are one loop contributions, and these are like the leading two loop contributions. And the thing that I want you to notice, okay, let me first tell you what these things are. So T here is the log of M soft square over MT square, where we have defined M soft, which is basically the normalization scale. Okay, this comes from contributions of the Coleman-Weimer potential. Okay, so that depends on a normalization scale, and we have taken it to be proportional to the product of the two stop masses, the lightest and the heaviest. And XT contains the information from the trilinear terms, so the off-diagonal terms in the mass matrix for the stops. Now, the thing that I want you to notice is that you see that there are basically two ways to raise the Higgs mass from these contributions. One way is to take large values for the parameters for the atop, for the trilinear term in the mass mixing matrix. And the other one, which requires larger values, is to increase the soft mass. This one, notice that it actually enters in the logarithm. So that means that you actually need very large values of the soft breaking masses to induce a sizable contribution to the Higgs mass. You can get it, if you want, in a cheaper way by actually increasing the trilinear term. Okay, but the conclusion about this formula, or what I want you to notice, is that actually, you need large soft breaking parameters in the stop sector, okay? And that is what gives you this large contribution at the quartic to the quartic coupling of the Higgs. But that comes at a price, okay? This large soft breaking parameters implies that there will also be contributions at the quadratic level for the quadratic terms in the Higgs, okay? And let me show you how that actually works. Okay, so let me first write the minimization conditions for the MSSM. And they are this. And in these minimization conditions, I will actually take into account the finite loop corrections from the Coleman-Weinberg potential. Okay? So that's why I'll define this MH hat, which I will write in a second, what they actually are. Okay, there's the usual two equations. Forget something, sorry. Oh, yeah. And okay, so these are the usual minimization conditions for the MSSM. Okay, and this MH hats, okay, they actually have the bare parameters MH up square. And then we can basically include the corrections from the effective potential in the following way. And similarly for MH down. Hmm? Now, so if you look at this equation right here, okay, you see what will happen is that these large stop corrections actually will induce corrections to the up component. And the way to see that is actually to use the normalization group evolution. Okay, so these corrections, contrary to the finite loop corrections that come from the Coleman-Weinberg potential, are actually UV, logarithmically UV sensitive. And one can see this by basically integrating the normalization group equations for MH up at the leading log approximation. And here you see that the stop parameters, the stop mass, and the trilinear term all show up as contributions at quadratic order on the Higgs. And there's a UV sensitivity on the cutoff scale of the theory. Okay? So you can see right here, if we need large stop breaking parameters, this will induce large corrections on this side of the equation. Okay, let's think that these corrections are about order TV. Usually one needs trilinears, for example, trilinear term of order 3 TV or something like that. And then on the other hand, this, which enters right here, okay, we need this to be of order roughly electroweak scale, okay, of order B. Okay. So you see that what needs to happen is that I need to tune the value of my bare parameter at the scale where SUSY is transmitted. I need to tune this value to compensate this large correction such that this tuning, this difference, gives me something that is of order electroweak scale. Okay? And this is what is known as the little hierarchy problem, basically. Now, the scales that are involved usually in the problem are the scales where SUSY is transmitted from the hidden sector to the visible sector. Let's call this scale, this is like the effective cutoff of our theory. It's called the scale lambda. Then here, in principle, one can always use the normalization group evolution, actually supersymmetric, to see what are the parameters at the scale and soft, okay, where we actually break electroweak symmetry. And then one can actually run, once we have this, one can run down to the scales where the Paul Higgs mass, okay, and obtain all the different values. So basically, there are three different scales. And like I said, there are finite loop corrections, okay, which basically depend on these scales right here. But then there are these logarithmically sensitive corrections that come at quadratic order on the Higgs and imply a tuning on the Higgs BEV. So if you want a BEV that is of order 174 GB, we need to tune the quadratic terms such that we get something of that order. Okay? Any questions at the moment? Okay, so that is what is known as the little hierarchy problem. As you can see, it's not really the big hierarchy problem, which it deals with quadratic sensitivity on the UV scale, but it's only logarithmic sensitivity. Okay, so raised a little bit. So one way to actually quantify this was introduced by Barbieri and Giudice by the following measure. Okay, so let me call this sigma b, and it basically is the maximum that is obtained evaluating all of the parameters that are relevant of the theory of the logarithmic derivative of the BEV square with respect to the parameters of the theory at the scale, at the UV scale or the cutoff scale, okay? And the idea of this measure is basically what it does is it actually tells you once you move your parameters at this UV scale, okay, at this cutoff scale, you move them infinitesimally, how much will the BEV change at the electroweak scale? So that's the idea of this measure. And okay, very good. Okay, and then one can do this for the MSSM. Okay, so let me actually rewrite this a little bit. Let me simplify it. Well, not simplify it, actually. Let me write this in another way. So I can also write this as a sum of the parameters at the scale lambda, okay, divided by b squared. So what I will use here is basically the chain rule. I will use that the parameters at the soft scale are related to the parameters at the UV scale or the cutoff scale by renormalization group evolution, by the beta functions. So I can always write this in the following way. So again, the only thing that I have done here is I have just used the chain rule in this factor right there. Okay, so if we actually look what happens in the MSSM, like I said, there the biggest contributions comes from the corrections to MHUP. So that's what we actually need to look at.
Anibal?
Yes.
So the whole point there is, can you replace the last derivative in the previous line with beta function?
Exactly. That's the idea. Yes. So so if you actually do that, which is that thing, I will replace that last term by the derivatives. Okay. Again, what you have here is mq3 at the scale lambda, mu3 at the scale lambda, and a top square at the scale lambda times the log lambda over m soft times, this is very important, the derivative of b square with respect to mhup square at m soft. Okay? And now notice what happens actually. Okay, so in the MSSM, let's for the moment neglect the corrections from the Coleman-Weinberg potential. What one finds is that this dB square dmH up square at the scale m soft is actually in the large tangent beta region, which is the region where we want to be because we want to enhance the Higgs mass at tree level. It's the following thing. Okay? It's 2b square plus mc square plus things that are order that are suppressed by tangent beta. Okay? So notice that in the MSSM, we basically have no freedom to suppress this derivative. So once these things become large, there is really no way to actually alleviate the tuning. So that's an important result, basically, that we are always in trouble in the MSSM. There's really no way to suppress those large corrections, which we need to raise the Higgs mass. That's an issue. Okay, so, and actually, now that we know that the Higgs or some resonance state, spin zero state, CP even, mostly probably, is at 126 GB, okay, and putting all of the constraints, one finds that in the MSSM, with all of these experimental constraints, this sigma v, okay, so the tuning, is basically always large. If you want to think about it, 1 over this is what you call usually the fine tuning. Okay? So it's at the order of the hundreds or per mil. Okay, so what are the options, right? I mean, this is a problem. Okay, some people don't worry about tunings that are of order 100 or per mil. But it's starting to become a little bit uncomfortable. So what are the things that one can do? OK, so one can either forget about the tuning problem, OK, and then just assume that we live in a landscape, believe in the anthropic principle, and work on split SUSY, which is an option, valid option. Or other things that one can actually do is we could add contributions, D-term contributions, like I said. D-term contributions are actually the things that give you the core decoupling at tree level. So you could possibly enlarge your gauge group, add stronger couplings. Okay, that would give you stronger quartic contributions. And that would be a way to raise the Higgs mass. And the other option that there is actually to, another type of option is to actually add additional F-term contributions. Okay, and an example of this is actually the NMSSM. Okay, where the idea is to introduce a gauge singlet superfield S. So this will be actually the path that we decided to follow in our work. And so let me erase these things. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about the scale invariant NMSSM. Like I said, the idea there is that one introduces a gauge singlet. And in principle, there could be many terms that one could write in the super potential. But if he wants to have for free the solution of the mu problem, usually what one does is you introduce a C3 symmetry parity, if you want, such that there are no mass terms on the superpotential. Okay, so that's that. Hence the name scale invariant NMSSM. Okay, so the idea is that besides the usual superpotential terms that you find in the MSSM, there are also these additional terms. there is this this trilinear coupling, or this cubic coupling at the in the superpotential, and then usually this other term here. And like I said, there is a C3 symmetry that actually forbids all couplings with dimensions of mass. Or now there is also one also introduces soft terms. So these are the usual soft terms that one has in the MSSM. But okay, there's also a soft breaking mass for the singlet. And there are trilinear terms. Okay. Let me write them as this. S H down, H up. Trilinear terms for because okay of the new interactions. Okay. Okay, so one simple thing that I want you to notice. Is that you see that if we take the scalar component of the gauge of the superfield and it gets a BEV, okay, and lambda is of order 1, we solve the mu problem, right? We can explain, and that BEV is of order of electroweak, right? Then we can explain why that supersymmetric term is actually of order at the electroweak scale. And then the other thing that I want you to notice is that this term right here, if you calculate the contributions to the quartic couplings, if you calculate actually FS star, right, FS, you see that it will actually generate a quartic coupling, let me call it lambda h, for the Higgs that is proportional to lambda square. So that's very simple to see from here. So you see that there is a three-level contribution, okay, an additional three-level contribution coming from this term right there. Now, the other thing that we did in our work is, so we assume CP conservation in the Higgs vector. And that implies that in the Higgs singlet sector. And that implies that there will be three CP even states, two CP odds, and one charge Higgs. Okay. And see if I want to write this. Well, yeah, maybe it's not necessary. So it's usually very interesting to do a rotation, okay, in the CP even sector by an angle beta. Sometimes it actually helps to clarify a lot of things. So if you actually take your mass matrix, okay, and you go from the gauge basis to this basis little h, big H s, okay, basically by a rotation by an angle beta. What happens is that only one of the Higgs, in this case, little h, gets a BEV. So first thing that one can actually see is that the only, well, besides S, S also obviously gets a BEV, but I'm saying this one right here, the big H, actually doesn't get a BEV. Okay? So this gets a BEV, the electroweak BEV, B. Okay? I think that's how it is, yeah. I forgot here. H up, H down, and S.
Probably cosine and sine.
Okay. I think it's okay from what I remember. Anyway, okay, so if you actually look at the mass matrix, okay, for these states, what one finds is that the diagonal element HH actually has two contributions. Okay, there is the usual contribution, which we found from the D terms of the gauge couplings, right? The weak gauge couplings. But then there is this additional contribution that I was telling you about coming from the F terms. Okay, so like I said, this is the T term, but now there's the additional contribution from the F terms. Okay, so notice right here that if this coupling lambda is large, okay, then we can have actually a sizable contribution coming from the F terms, especially in the regions where tangent beta is small. Okay, so when tangent beta is small, actually this contribution goes to zero, becomes small. But then this one picks up. Okay, this is of order one, basically. And then you get a mass that is of order roughly lambda b squared, lambda squared.
Yes, go ahead. Clarify something. So this little and capital H, those are not necessarily mass items.
They're not. Yeah, they're not, exactly.
But beta is the regular beta. So
beta
the
is the regular.
Beta.
Yes. Okay, so this actually becomes an upper bound at tree level for the Higgs mass. Mm-hmm. Because what you see, what can happen is that if this state is the lightest state, okay, if our lightest state is mostly the little h, what will happen is that the mixing with the big H will induce a pull down effect, okay, and it will lower the Higgs mass at tree level. So that's what I want to say. So this is basically, you can think of it as an upper bound at tree level. Yeah, and like I said, the mixing only induces a pull down effect and brings this thing down. Okay, good. So let's see, set that part. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit what we did. Okay, so what we did in the work was to do a scan of the parameter space of this type of models. And we sort of tried to work in the base case scenarios for the fine tuning. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to be in the best case scenario, just to see how large could be the regions in parameter space. What's the biggest region of parameter space allowed for small fine tuning? Okay, so what we did for that is We kept only the third generation squares. And the Gaginos besides the Higgsinos, right? Light. So we decouple first and second generation squares, sleptons, and also third generation sleptons. Mm-hmm. Meaning that their masses, their soft masses, are the order of the Katov scale. The other thing that this helps obviously with flavor issues, and also constraints from the LHC on first families. And then the other thing that we did is we took a low, let's call it messenger scale. Scale is this capital lambda that I was writing before. Okay, it's the cutoff of our effective theory, and we took low values of the scale. Okay, so basically, we consider lambda to be 20 TB, 100 TB, and 1,000 TB, and I'm putting quotation marks on messenger scale because you could either, you know, one could think of it, okay, maybe 20 TB for gauge mediation, right, or 100 TB, but that might be pushing it a little bit. But one could think of other type of models, maybe composite, you know, like if you want to associate this with a composite scale and talk about direct mediation, then actually that one could make it work for such low scales. That's why I put like messenger scale, just meaning that there's something that is transmitted from a hidden sector or some way the visible and the hidden sector talk, and then the scale is basically the cutoff of our effective theory. We didn't care about what was the transmission of SUSY breaking. We tried to do a bottom-up approach. So one could think about UV completions of this type of models. And what happens is that in this way, what we try to get is we try to get the largest regions, okay, of parameter space. That are consistent with low fine-tuning. Obviously, if I increase lambda, I can only make the fine-tuning worse, right? So I would shrink those regions, which I can always do. And well, okay, and then flavor constraints are ameliorated with the splitting of the families, and also LHC constraints. But let me just comment on that. Okay, now the other thing that happens is that now that we have this actually this low cutoff scale, if one again looks at the randomization group equation for lambda, one finds that the value of lambda at the scale M soft can actually be bigger than one. Now, just to remind you, if we actually had taken this lambda to be of the order m gut, then the value of lambda at the soft mass scale is usually has to be below 0.6, something like that, 0.65. So you cannot get a very large increase to the Higgs mass in that case. But if you lower your cutoff and you take the largest possible value at this at your effective cutoff scale, then you can get values of lambda at the soft scale that are bigger than one, which would produce a contribution. And these are actually the models known as lambda SUSY. So this is basically the type of models that we decided to focus on. And this has been worked by Barbieri. Yes. Go ahead. Yes, you still get a radiative. That's the idea. Yes.
Kind of lower scale, which there's not enough room for the plane parameters to run.
I think that we use an MSM tools, and I believe that we got a radiative and the true symmetry rig, and everything was fine when we did the scan of the parameter space. Okay, but one thing that I want you to notice is that the fact that lambda now can actually be large at the soft scale. And that implies that not only the top stop corrections, right, the finite stop top stop corrections are important, so the loop corrections, finer or infinite, doesn't matter. Right. This one were important because of the Yukawa of the top. But also, not because lambda is large, okay, also actually the Higgs, okay, singlet corrections, so the corrections from this sector actually are very important. Are important as well. Let's go. Okay. So that means that actually to do a proper study of this type of models, you have to take into account loop corrections coming from the Higgs singlet sector. If you are in the value of a gauge cup, if your cupping setup are actually large, obviously loop corrections become important. Okay. Very good. So let me see the. Second, I'm evaluating whether to write a big equation or not. Okay, maybe I won't write it down. But now there are three minimization conditions, okay, that one can actually write down. So before, like in the MSSM, there were only two. Now there are three because also the S gets a F. Okay, and one can do the same trick and actually calculate the corrections, calculate the fine-tuning, okay, of the Higgs BEV in this type of models. And again, that can be done. And remember that I was telling you that in the MSSM, dV squared dmh up square, right? For now, just write it here. this was basically minus 2b squared over mc squared. So it was fixed. Now, if you do that in this type of models, what you find is that, again, at the scale m soft, that this can actually be suppressed. Okay? Like kappa over lambda cubed, cotangent of 2 beta. And this is doing an expansion when lambda is large. Okay? So before, right, remember that in our fine-tuning, basically we had things that went something like, let's just write it something generically, like a top square. It was a log factor. Okay? And then there was this dB squared, dm hap squared. Okay? And in the case of the MSSM, this was fixed. So this wasn't a problem. But now you see that when you're actually in this lambda SUSY type of models, where lambda can actually be large, you can actually suppress this big contribution coming from the stop sectors. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you can reduce, you can relieve the tuning. Yes.
Just to make sure, but you're also going to check sensitivity with respect to other parameters like lambda or y top.
Yes, exactly. I did. We did all of that. Yeah, exactly. So
you're claiming that
yes,
mh up squared the most important, or
yes, mh up squared is the most important. Exactly. We did a whole study of the of all of the tunings, right, with all respect to all of the parameters. And then what we found is actually that mh up square was mh up square. Sometimes it was m1, m2, because we also had gauge genus that could be light or heavy, right? The gluiness actually would also be important in some regions of parameter space. But usually it was mh up that dominated. Well, obviously, if mu3 and mu3 are small, or a top is small, then it don't.
Or
white
top. Yes, exactly. You check white top.
White top is very
Yeah.
Or even alpha strong can be important.
Yes, yes. Yes, we checked everything, all of the parameters. So it seems that one can actually relieve the tuning, okay, the usual Higgs Bev tuning in this type of models. And therefore, in principle, what one could do is we could actually have larger stop masses, okay, that means that we could actually push. We wouldn't be so much constrained by LHC right now, right? Like right now, the constraints on the stop, I think, are like around 600 GB, and this is becoming a problem from the MSSM. But here, you have some room, actually, to go a little bit higher on stop masses, okay, push it up. And since there is not a crucial problem for the tuning, it seems, at least, for the Bev tuning. But nothing is for free, sadly. And now the fact that you have this large contributions, okay, the fact that lambda becomes large, okay, in order to reduce, to give a sizable contribution to the Higgs mass, and reduce at the same time the electroweak Bev tuning, implies that actually there will be another kind of tuning showing up. Okay, so this large lambda hertz. Okay. Now, the Higgs mass, let me write the Higgs mass sort of generically in this type of models, can be written in the following way. Okay, so there is the usual contribution, like I was saying, from the D terms. There's the F term contribution, the square sine squared 2 beta. I was telling you that there was a, because there's a mixing, right, between the little h and the big h, there's actually a pull down effect. Let me write this as a delta MH mix. And there are the usual top and singlet contributions. Okay, from the heat, let me write generically. This is the stop contribution at loop level from the Coleman-Weinberg potential. This is the Higgs singlet contribution from the Coleman-Weinberg potential. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we wanted to be in the region where actually tan beta is roughly 1, okay, maybe it could be a little bit above 1, and lambda is bigger than 1. And what happens is that we usually, in this region, we overshoot.
Yeah, but that's true in general, right?
Okay. We overshoot the Higgs mass at tree level.
Yeah,
So let's just, if you just consider the three-level Higgs mass, even with the mixing, you tend to overshoot it. Meaning that the mass is much bigger than 126 GeV. Now, this wouldn't have been a problem, okay, if we had actually measured Higgs mass of 600 GeV. Yeah? We have gone at the LHC, found a Higgs at 600 GeV, it wouldn't be an issue at all, okay? But the problem is that we actually measure somewhat light Higgs mass, okay? And there's a really large contribution when lambda is large coming from this term in particular. So for example, if just to give you an idea, if lambda is 2.4, then you find that the Higgs mass at tree level square is of the order of 10 times 126 GeV square. Okay? So there is like a 10% tuning coming from this type of effect. Okay, so what we found for most of our points.
What are you tuning?
Yes, I will tell you right now what I'm tuning. So what you're tuning is, okay, we did find a 126 GeV when we did our scan. Okay, so I will go into what we are tuning. Well, it turned out that what we are tuning is we're tuning this big three-level effect with the loop effect coming from the Higgs singlet sector. This loop effect actually can become negative. So this can give you actually a negative contribution to the Higgs mass. This one is usually positive, okay? So there is a tuning between the loop level and the Higgs mass at tree level, which gets you back to 126 GeV.
So what exactly puts you in the, why do you want the small temp beta?
You want small temp, well, okay. There are two things why you want small temp beta. One is that you, in principle, you want to enhance this part initially, right? Okay, now you don't want it. Now you want it. Now you want it. Now. The other thing that actually, why you actually want small time beta is because lambda is large, okay, you get, so the bigger time beta, you're breaking the custodial symmetry, okay, so you get contributions to the T parameter, okay? There are basically off diagonal terms in the neutralino mass matrix that are proportional to lambda tangent beta.
So it has nothing to do with fine tuning,
it's an experimental constraint, exactly. Okay, so, well, maybe I won't write up. Okay, now the other thing that I want to write down is that basically for most of our points in the scan that we did, we found that actually this mixing effect only reduces the mass at, so this delta MH mix only reduces the mass at like 40% level. Okay. At most. So you really need this large negative contribution coming from the Higgs singlet sector to bring you down back to 126.
Right.
Yes.
What forces you to choose lambda bigger than
one? There are two things, like I said. We were trying to find the best case scenario. Okay, so we wanted to get. In principle, you don't. You're not necessarily in that region. Okay, it's not necessary that you have to have lambda bigger than one. We study actually small values of lambda as well. We study lambda, I think it was usually between 0.7 up to 2.4, 2.5, something like that. That's the range that we study. But initially, you wanted to be in this region because that was actually what was giving you the large values of the Higgs mass contribution. Not necessarily the case, and actually I will show you a plot where we are not in those very big lambda regions. I will show it to you in a second. Let me tell you a little bit more about what happens in this case. So
does the delta MH mix include the mixing of the single and the double?
Yes.
So
yes.
Why does it only reduce it at most 40%? I think that can reduce it all the way to zero.
How would you reduce it all the way to zero?
If the single double mixing can even make the
Higgs. Oh, yeah. But then you have to decouple. They introduce fine tuning, right? Because that means that basically you would have to decouple your heavy states, right? The big H, probably also the CP odd, one of the CP odd masses, right? The charge Higgs. They will be decoupled. You will have to take them large.
They don't have to be large. I think just the mixing of the lightest double and the singlet can make the double direction even tachyonic. So it can go away.
Not in the Okay, not at least when we were studying with constraints of fine-tuning, we didn't find that. We didn't find that the mixing could actually bring you all the way down with the fine-tuning constraints, okay?
Yeah, there could be tuning.
Yeah, so if you want to be in a region of low tuning, then you could not bring it down there. But I agree that, yeah. Yes, exactly. So exactly, this 40% relies on a tuning cut and the introduction of an additional tuning, okay, which is this tuning mass that I will define right now. So in the same way that we had this tuning on the BEV, okay, given that now there can be also a tuning on the Higgs mass, we define analogously a sigma H, okay, which is again the same thing, right, over all of the parameters of your theory. But now instead of having the BEV, we have now the Higgs mass with respect to the parameters. Now, the way that we do this, okay, now obviously the Higgs mass also depends on the BEVs, okay? So what you can actually do is you can replace MH up square, MH down square, and MS square by the BEVs, B up, B down, and BS, and keep those fixed, okay? And in that way, what this is actually quantifying is quantifying the tuning in the core decoupling of the Higgs, okay? This is an effective tuning in the core decoupling, the effective core decoupling of the Higgs, independently of the tuning in the BEV. So now that you have these two tunings and they are independent, you can define, let's call it a total tuning or a combined tuning. As the product, right? Since they are independent, just think about them as sort of like probabilities, okay? So there will be a product of the two tunings. Okay. And this should give us an idea of the total tuning in our model, in the theory that we're studying. Okay, so that's what we actually did. We defined that total tuning. Okay, now I will be able to show you some plots. Okay, so here are some plots. Okay, so what's this fixed? Okay, so this is a plot of this derivative, dB squared dmh up square and dmh up square as a function of lambda. Okay, and the color coding here is black are the points with a effective cutoff of 20 dB, orange are with 100 dB, and yellow with 1,000 dB. Okay, and what you can see here is that this indeed this dB squared becomes smaller as lambda grows. Okay, so this will actually relieve the tuning. And the other way to see this is also in this other plot where we have the stop mass versus lambda. Okay, and what I should say is that all of these points have a BEV tuning that is better than 5%. And don't worry for now, for the moment, about the color coding. Okay, well, the color coding basically means it's just the total tuning. Okay, so actually these points with green have total tuning better than 5%. This one have better than 1%, and these are the ones that are worse than 1%. Okay, but anyway, what I want you to appreciate here is actually, you see that if you actually take larger values of lambda, you could get the lightest stop to be, in principle, with a BEV tuning of 5% of order 3 dB. And it would seem to be fine.
Can I ask a very stupid question?
Go ahead, yes.
You say, 5% tuning, that
yes.
This means this quantity is...
1 over lambda, yeah. The BEV tuning, okay? If you want the total tuning to be better than 1%, these are the green points right here, okay? So actually, you see that if you want the total tuning to be better than 1%, you could only go like up to 1.3 dB, something like that.
And the Higgs mass here is around 126, or?
The Higgs mass here, everything is, yeah, between 124 and 127. This is in the case, so that was in the case that lambda seemed This is just to show you how lambda actually occurs. Okay, so this is the Higgs mass tuning versus lambda, And notice indeed that as you make lambda larger, the Higgs mass tuning starts to become large. Okay? So it goes like actually like lambda square, basically. Which we expect, right, from this right here.
Some physical significance to the two different branches? It looks like there are kind of two regions with a gap in them.
I don't think so. So when we did the study, we used a Markov chain. So there's really no statistical significance in these plots. The Markov chain wasn't long enough. So these are, these are regions. Probably this will get populated if you actually do a longer statistical run. The other thing that I want you to notice is about this the Higgs mass tuning as a function of tangent beta. This is actually something interesting that happens. You see that actually when tangent beta becomes slightly larger than one, actually the Higgs mass tuning goes down. Okay? And this has to do with a twofold effect. One of them is the fact that there is this three level contribution goes like sine squared to beta. Okay, so when tangent beta becomes large, sine squared to beta becomes smaller. Okay, so that's obvious. But then the other thing that happens is that actually as tangent beta goes large, like I was telling you, there's a contribution to the T parameter, okay, because of the custodial symmetry breaking that becomes larger. And like I said, that contribution comes from the off-diagonal terms in the neutralino mass matrix and is proportional to lambda. Okay, so that means that actually you have to decrease lambda. So it's a two-fold effect, okay? It's the fact that this term, the sine squared to beta, becomes smaller, but it's also the fact that lambda becomes smaller. Mm-hmm. And that allows you to have lower tunings. Mm-hmm. So this actually is an interesting region to study. Let's see. Okay, and finally, this is a plot of the combined tuning function of lambda. And you see that I was telling you, we're studying values of lambda. I think usually it usually was between 0.6 or 7 up to 2.4 or something like that. The largest value allowed by naive dimensional analysis. And the thing that I want you to notice is that, okay, in these regions where lambda is less than 1, the total tuning is dominated by the BEV tuning. And in the regions where lambda is larger than 1, actually, the total tuning is dominated by the Higgs mass tuning right here. But notice that nicely, there are values, okay, when lambda is of order 1, actually the total tuning is minimized. And you can get it to be roughly of order 10%, which is not bad. Okay. Now this plot, this next plot shows again the total tuning now as a function of m soft, and here we took a typical point of the MSSM. I think that point corresponded to mu of 200 GB, a CPO mass of 1 TB, and what else was it? Tangent beta 20, and we moved a top such that we would get a Higgs mass between 124 and 127. Hmm? That is described by this. And then we calculated the tuning in the Higgs, okay? In the Higgs bell. Now, in the MSSM, there is only the tree level contribution to the Higgs mass is small. There is a loop contribution coming from stop, and that contribution is always positive. So there is no mass tuning, Higgs mass tuning in the MSSM, okay? There is no problem with that. So we just took that sigma h to be 1 in that case. And then this is the tuning, basically, of the Higgs bell for the total tuning in the MSSM. Hmm? And this is our tuning. And as you can see, can always do better than the MSSM. So that was the purpose of this plot, just to show you that, in principle, one always does better. Even though one has an additional tuning in the Higgs mass, still, one can find regions of parameter space where actually one does better than in the MSSM for a typical point. Okay?
You improve the tuning by an order.
Yeah, exactly, roughly like that. Yeah.
So in the MSSM,
yes.
Are you in this, what is that, maximum mixing scenario?
Yes, or? I think, yeah, exactly. We're in the maximum mixing scenario, yes.
And the fact that you kind of have to tune the AT and with the soft masses, does that somehow go into that estimate?
Well, I think the only tuning that you have in the MSSM is the BEV tuning, right? There is really no...
So the rest, you just say, okay, this is a choice.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But it's, in some sense, it's an additional constraint, right, that you say, okay, to be in this scenario, I have to have this relation between these two parameters.
True. In principle, one could consider that. Yeah, I would have to think about it, but if one would be an additional thing or not.
Remind me the color coding again.
Yes, sorry. So the color code, this one is black, is 20 TB. Orange is 100 TB cutoff, and yellow is 1,000 TB. So you see that as you increase the cutoff, obviously the tuning becomes worse, especially, well, this is, yeah, the total tuning becomes worse. Okay. And here, green is when the total tuning is better than 20%, better than 1%, and worse than 1%. Okay.
So the lambda CC paper by Barbieri already pointed out that the cutoff is 10 dB.
Yeah.
2 dB. Better than 20%.
Yes.
So what's new here?
So what's new here is that they didn't take into account this Higgs mass tuning that you would actually have, right? Because lambda is large, and that would actually, like I said, you tend to overshoot the tree-level Higgs mass, and therefore you need this cancellation between the loop correction and the tree-level correction. That's an additional tuning that you have in your theory, okay? And therefore we take it into account basically as a product of the two tunings right there. Okay, other things that are different are actually that, but people actually have studied this. I think we're looking at the scale invariant in MSSM. And then we are also keeping the gate genus that in principle could be light. They decouple gate genus, but we're keeping them. In principle, they could be light, so we keep them around. Yes?
So this treatment of the product, like uncorrelated.
Yes.
Because you don't quite expect them to be uncorrelated, right? I mean, the BEM and the second derivative.
Well, yeah, that's why we keep them fixed. So what we do is we replace MH up square, MH down square, and MS square by the BEVs. But when we take the derivative, we keep the BEV fixed. Okay. So in that sense, it's a tuning in the quartic, really, of the Higgs, and not on the tree level. Okay. So let me just go on for a little bit more.
If you actually vary the parameters, like MS, for example,
yes,
then you do vary both the BEV and the Higgs mass simultaneously. So I'm worried that this sort of factorization as a product is going to affect. If I increase MS, then I make the BEV tuning worse. But at the same time, I'm increasing the mixing in a single.
No, but we replace MS, basically. So we're replacing MS by the BEV, and then we're keeping it fixed.
The BEV isn't a parameter of the theory at the cutoff.
Yeah, but you can always exchange one or the other one, right, using the minimization equations. That's what we do. Right? We use the minimization equations.
You're not supposed to use those equations, right? And you're supposed to vary the microscopic parameters.
Yeah, no, okay.
And
so we replace the conditions. Let me see how we actually did it. We replace the masses. It was the mass at. You have your contributions, right? You have, like I said, in the tuning that I was actually writing, I can in principle write everything. The dV square that I wrote, right, using the chain rule, I can always write in terms of the soft masses. So the masses at the soft scale, where I have whenever I'm doing my electroweak symmetry breaking, right? So there I can actually replace my MH up soft using the minimization equations. Okay? I have the contribution from the running using the chain rule, basically. Right? So I'm able to do that, I believe.
Would another way to do it be to just keep the parameters the parameters and then compute a delta BEV and a delta mass, multiply them and subtract some correlation? There should be some, I guess,
It could be,
two variables that are not independent.
Yeah.
But then I would, naively, the two terms that I'm multiplying are the same size as your two terms.
Yeah.
And then I'm subtracting a correlation, so I think that I would have a smaller number. So that's why I'm confused about
I don't know.
I'm not sure how the area in some space results scales with the change in the parameter. To the extent to which it's a product, just sort of assuming that you're mapping on the same measure. I mean, if it's correlated, it means that you actually get some kind of like ellipse or something.
But here I think they're anti-correlated.
But anyway, I mean, you could imagine measuring some kind of 2D area in parameter space, and that would solve the ambiguity of what you mean by. I'm not sure if this is that numerically do that.
Okay. Yeah. It could be. I want. It's another way probably of doing it, and once you check. Okay.
So
let me just before ending. Where were we? Okay. Yeah, so when we did the study, we imposed, okay, so we used NMSSM tools and we did a sampling of a random walk looking for points that actually were minimizing the tuning, okay? So trying to search for those regions of parameter space that minimize the bad tuning, especially. And okay, and we impose some obviously some experimental constraints. Okay, so the things that we impose were okay. So we impose collider searches. Some of the things are actually already included in MSSM tools, although we have to. So include lab, Tevatron, LHC. We also impose flavor constraints. And this can be important, particularly if your charge Higgs is light, especially in these regions that we are of small tangent beta. Usually the one that is more relevant is B2S gamma.
Hmm. For the LHC constraints, what?
Yeah. So what we did?
Mostly 70 eV.
Yes. We use I think we use 70 eV. And what we did is we took those simple analysis, usually of SUSY searches, you know, direct stop, direct bottom production, Gluino decay, so on and so forth. And we assumed that, so we took a conservative approach, and we just applied those basically like hard cuts on our parameter space, just to be on the safe side. We didn't want to do a whole collider analysis. We assume that R parity is conserved. And the LSP is usually either the neutralino, or if you think about this about gauge mediation, it could be the gravitino. Okay, and that could also be it.
For VS gamma, what do you assume is the form of the Scott mass matrix? So in general, it's basis dependent.
Yeah. So, so I think what we so let me see. So what do you mean by the stop?
Previously, you said you only consider third order and decoupled first.
For decoupled first.
You can't compute VS gamma consistently with that assumption.
Yeah, how are you consistently doing both of those two things?
Yeah, like you could have 2-3 stop mixing at your speed as gamma, I
guess.
Yeah. Who knows, you decouple first and second.
We
decouple. Now you're including those.
No, why are we including those? No, we're...
S.
Oh, sorry. That's right. Yes. No, but there is a contribution from the charge Higgs, right? That's the one that we're actually worried about here. We're only worry about the, I mean, yeah, exactly. You decouple those, so that actually those don't give much of a contribution. We're only worried about the contribution from the charge Higgs, actually. That enters into B2S gamma.
So still.
Right? Okay. And then we impose electroweak precision test. So basically, the S and T parameter, okay? And like I was telling you, this is important because the off-diagonal terms, right? Neutralino mass matrix of like lambda, tangent beta. So I mean, those actually are the ones that give you the biggest contribution to the T parameter. And finally, the last thing that we impose is that we didn't want to explain dark matter, but we didn't want to overclose the universe. We were assuming R parity. So. Usually our LSP was either a neutralino, could be either a neutralino or a gravitino, depending on what you assumed. But that was more model dependent, I guess. Okay, and then the other thing that we did is we calculated this signal strength, okay, which is just sigma h times the branching fraction of Higgs to whatever divided by the production standard model Higgs. Okay, and we did this for Z star WW star BB bar and tau tau bar. And we demanded that we wanted to be at the one sigma level with the constraints back then when we did actually the paper. And we left the gamma a little bit loose, meaning that since we wanted to see also if we could get an enhancement in the gamma, we didn't apply like a straight cut on these things. Okay, very good. The other thing, let me just finally tell you that what we usually find when we did this parameter scan, we usually found that the lightest CP even eigenstate was the one that was associated with the 126 GB Higgs. Okay, we didn't find that case where, again, with small tuning, right? We didn't find the case when it was the second lightest one that was associated with the 126 GB Higgs. We found that usually was the lightest CP even mass eigenstate. Okay?
Can you check if you're in a global minimum?
We did check. Well, we use the check that NMSSN Tools has. It does check whether you're in a global minimum in some regions. But as a matter of fact, that is an interesting point. And that's actually something that we're trying to see right now. Because like I said, there are big corrections on the big singlet sector to your Coleman Wine potential. Actually, that could destabilize the electrolyte minima. So we're trying to look at that, whether that actually happens.
Later minimum.
Exactly.
Because of the
SHF
is
centrally.
Yeah.
And also
yes.
The lambda and kappa very small, right?
In the other case, you mean to get the second lightest? Well, we'd study up to 0.7 or something like that. Do you need smaller? Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, so if it needs, if you go to smaller lambda, you pay a price with the tuning in the BEV, right? So that's why you didn't want to also be in that.
How does that correlate with the kappa?
So kappa actually sometimes can be of order lambda, or it can be smaller.
You don't want to make it that small either.
And I think that there is a Peshe.
That's exactly the limit where you get the very light cases. And
okay.
The
I see. Okay. Yeah, well, but the problem is that actually, another thing that we quantify is that there could be an additional, so to get a light CPO Higgs, there's an additional tuning that you have to pay, okay? If you want to make it too light, well, there are a couple of things that actually happen, okay? So if, first of all, given that kappa can be large and lambda can be large, if you make
the CPO case lighter than the case mass over 2, and you basically arithmetically allow that case to CPO state, and you start messing up all of the branching fractions that you measure at the latency for the case.
Sure.
Because well, yeah, that you won't agree. You won't agree at 1 sigma, basically. Because lambda and kappa are large, okay? So it becomes like 100% of the times to...
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Push lambda and kappa very small, so you basically
have the Pitcher coefficient. Okay. In your case, yeah, I see, very good. In that case, yeah, maybe in that case it would work. But then, like I said, you pay a price on the BEV tuning. Yeah. Okay. Yes?
You mentioned overclosure problem. Can you comment on how you're avoiding the domain wall problem?
We didn't... probably you can add, you know, you can do things like usually you add a tadpole, right, or things. We didn't study that part of the cosmology.
Tadpole is not scaling invariant.
Yeah, exactly. So you would have to be some sort of breaking of your scale invariant symmetry, basically. You have to add, but we didn't go into it. We didn't study that problem. Okay, let me show you just
the initial part of the spectrum that we find.
So first of all, for the mu problem, we usually find mu's, we generate mu's that are between 105 and 800 GB, that sort of range. And so what I want you to notice about this is basically that what we find in this type of natural spectrum is that your electroweak sparticles and also the Higgses
are light.
Okay, or can be light, can be below a GB, okay?
And your color particles,
okay, usually
could potentially be heavy. Okay, they can be light, but actually they can
be also heavy. And again, the color code here means that red is worse than 1% total tuning, better than 1% total tuning, and better than 5% total tuning.
Did you consider
consider the case with the singlet like Higgs is the lightest?
So we usually found that the Higgs was the lightest. Yes. Yeah, the lightest CP even. Yes.
With lambda large.
I think you might pay a price on that. If she was telling me that you need then a light CPR, right? That was the case. Okay, but then you pay a price because there's an additional tuning because of that happening on the CPR mass. If you, we look at the tunings of all of these masses, okay, of all of them, and we found that in that case there would be an additional.
If the CPR becomes too less.
And moreover, I mean, like I said, you're large, you would change the branching pattern of the Higgs. You will not be in agreement with the LHC. Yeah.
Always very heavy-ish.
Yeah, exactly. So what it tends to happen that the Wino is heavy. Yeah.
And
that might have to be.
Yeah.
So the neutralino, okay, the lightest neutralino actually can be a lot of the time. I'll show you that in the dark matter plot. But it's true that because of the way that we were doing the scanning, which was, I think, just linearly, it tends to push the Wino masses, or it tends to find more points when the Wino masses are heavy, okay? Slightly.
The tuning effect of the Wino pulling up the...
We did take that into account, yes. We did, yes.
And then this upper limit on the spectrum is just from the breaking scale, from lambda, or from... I mean, how did you choose the...
Well, obviously, if you start making your stops too large, right, then you start having problems with tuning, right? I mean, you can make them large, but you cannot make them also extremely large. You start paying a price there with tuning.
This one is for the 20 dB cutoff.
So I think we are okay. This is just one, yeah. So I think that was basically it. Obviously, when the things become too heavy, there was a case when actually the Wino was becoming too heavy, and it seemed to be giving you additional tuning. But then what you actually have to do is you have to decouple it and then match the theory down, right? Do this running and match. We actually did that. Okay. So this is the signal strength, okay, in gamma-gamma versus the signal strength in ZC, okay? And a couple of things that I want you to notice is, first of all, I mean, you can always make them both bigger by basically reducing the branching fraction into BB bar. This is the usual thing, that you reduce the branching fraction into BB bar, but then you increase both. You increase gamma-gamma and you increase ZC sort of linearly, okay?
And then the other thing that I want you to notice is that
there are this couple of interesting points right here. Mm-hmm. And actually notice that this one actually has a pretty good tuning, but there are also tunings here that are not so bad, right? Like,
all of these points have a tuning that are better than 1%.
And
what is happening here is something interesting. These
points actually correspond
to region of tangent B that are of order 3.
And like I was telling you there before from a previous plot, those region of large tangent beta actually have a reduced Higgs mass tuning
because of the T parameter
and because sine squared 2 beta becomes
smaller. And furthermore, what happens is that since lambda now is a little bit smaller,
actually your charginos become light. Okay, so this is a point actually where your charginos become, okay, your Wino is heavy, okay? So your charginos is mostly Higgsino,
and it has a mass that is
basically mu, okay? And actually,
these points correspond to a chargino matrix of order 110 GB, of that area, 110, 120 GB.
So that gives you a loop contribution
to the Higgs into gamma-gamma, okay?
Because the charginos is light, lambda is
slightly large, okay, it's
1.1, 1.2, you know, it's obviously not that large, but it's like 1, of order 1,
okay? And as a matter of fact, the mixing matrix, okay, so the mixing angles that shows up the single component in the Higgs eigenstate, okay, is negative.
Okay.
So it actually contributes, okay?
It adds the WW contribution
at loop level.
And that is what is giving you this rate,
okay, in the gamma-gamma channel.
So that was something actually interesting. So there are
some points here.
We weren't looking for
this. That's why we found so little. Okay? We didn't
weren't really looking for that. But we found a couple of points where actually you can have this enhancement into gamma-gamma due to large Arduinos.
And the tuning is
pretty good.
Of the Higgs to Arduinos.
Yes.
By lambda.
Well, in this case,
it's
governed by lambda. Yeah, exactly. Actually, it goes like square root of 2 lambda
and the mixing angle. The component of Sundino.
That's it. And then
on this plot,
what I want you to just to notice is that you see that when R gamma gamma is of order 1, and let's say that we want it to be like a standard model like Higgs, okay, so 1 and 1, okay, here, gamma gamma, but you see that
R to V bar actually becomes larger. The branching V bar is larger. So
it seems that you can really never have a completely standard model like Higgs, okay, with all of its coupling as in the standard model. I mean, you could do that, right? Obviously, if you decouple, if they get infinity,
you can go back to the SSM, then you can do it. But in this regions, okay, and in the lambda SUSY models, it seems that we could have one, for example, here, we can have the gamma gamma and the CC to be
one,
but then you always face, there's always a deviation from the standard model like this.
You can never, yeah. So what happens is that you can never really decouple the same.
So remember in this space where you have little h, big h, and s? Mm-hmm. Only in principle try to decouple the big h. Okay, that is something that you could do. And you basically
what you need to do is you can either. It impacts impacts the coupling to BB bar.
Here there's a bunch of parameters that
where gamma gamma is easy, you have standard model light, and this the right hand plot is then saying that I'm necessarily pushing out BB bar. That's because of the same.
I'm saying that is because you'll never really have a standard model like this.
So at those points, do you also, on those points with the Arduino contribution, do you also have suppression in BB bar? It seems hard to get suppression.
I believe
so. The thing is, if this would be like somewhere.
So
it's those, has to be actually on how you can see that.
It's those points up there.
The rest,
okay.
The
I see.
Well.
Yeah, okay. Right. Okay.
Just a quick question.
Yes.
Are you to the expression you wrote up for R, are you including corrections to the total decay width there?
No.
The total decay width as well. The expression you wrote up before, there's the signal strength.
Yes,
the,
yes.
Signal strength, yeah. Arduino S production cross-section, we're assuming there's fuel fusion mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Time expansion fraction.
And then
invisible, you're talking about the invisible decay width, or what?
The total decay width.
The total, yeah, we include the total.
Okay, so that's included.
Okay, so for SUSY searches,
so this is basically what I was telling
you before, that if you want to live in a region where the total tuning is
better than
5%, then
usually your stops, your lighter stops,
can be at most 1.3 dB, okay?
And your Gluino can be at most 2.5. And then for the lightest Mitralino, you see that usually it has to be below 400 GeV in this region. And then it depends where you actually and finally, so this is the Neutralino. Sorry, there was a question?
No.
Just as stupid.
This is the Neutralino ray density. And let me just, so here the colors have changed.
What did they actually?
Let me just tell you what it means.
So green means when the Neutralino
is mostly Singlino. Blue
means when the Neutralino
is mostly Higgsino. Orange means when the Neutralino is mostly Gluino. And red means when the Neutralino is mostly Gluino. And we have kept this
color purple right here, okay?
Which is the case when you either would have a constraint from overclosing you in the universe, as you see right here, okay, or from
some
direct detection, like we're taking Sino 100 results, okay, or from direct detection constraints. Okay, but we have kept them because if your SUSY mediation mechanism was gauge mediation, then your gravitino would be the LSP, and in this, for this, usually for this point, your gravitino is of order 10 to the minus 2 electron volts, thermalizes, and it gives you a really density that's well below that demand, so it's something you're completely fine. Okay, things that I want you to just notice is that if it is mostly singlino, then obviously because lambda and kappa are large, right, you usually, most of the parameters that you tend to underproduce
the Rayleigh density of this particle.
It would be a problem. But then there are some interesting points right here, right, especially in this discussion right here, when it's, which is the case when the neutrino is mostly vino. And then actually, in that case, when it's mostly vino, it still has a small but non-vanishing singlino component. Okay? And given that it has that small non-vanishing singlino component, or the xeno component, what happens is that you can have this type of annihilations. Okay, so yeah, so you can have an annihilation of the neutralino that is mediated through the lightest CPO, okay, and then that it decays into Higgs and the CPO. Like it's known, this one is it's an S wave. So these are the important diagrams, okay? Give you the biggest annihilation. So the other one is through about Higgs, decaying either into BB bar or decaying into WW star.
So and this one, so these ones are P wave, right? And therefore the Higgs there usually is in resonance for this type of annihilation. So it is interesting that in this type of scenarios, it seems that you could have, even though we were not looking for it, you could have a dark matter candidate that is mostly vino and has some non-vanishing singlino component. And given that lambda and kappa can be large, okay, actually the annihilation can be still strong enough to give you a right Rayleigh density. We might study that in the future. To go with that. So thank you for saying. Probably I went a little bit overboard, but thanks.